Welcome to Dietitians Uncorked, a podcast hosted by Kat and Kelly, two registered dietitians who co-founded Nutriving, a virtual nutrition practice. We talk all things food, nutrition, life, and of course, wine. This is a judgment-free zone where all foods fit and all bodies are welcome. Thanks for listening. Welcome back to Dietitians Uncorked, everyone. We are so glad to have you here. And we have a really feel-good episode today. Just some happy thoughts to share. We are going to be touching on ways to kind of monitor progress aside from the scale, because there's a lot of other things to pay attention to. But before we get into that, as always, Kat, what are you drinking today?
It's a wine called Queulat. It's a Cabernet Sauvignon. It's a Gran Reserva. It's 2019. It's wonderfully playful. I'm gonna sound super bougie, but I'm getting plum. Mm-hmm. It's fun. It's a bit tart, but it's also leathery and kind of like you're smelling an old man. I love it. I love it so much.
I'm sold. That sounds really lovely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Today I have a Malbec, which I'm a big Malbec fan. Lots of Malbecs. This one is by Catena. It's from Argentina, 2019. Nice and dry, just like I like it. Also has like notes of fruit, you know, like blackberry. Do we sound like wine tasters? Like very fancy, I think.
I hope so.
Still,
I know.
Still using Vivino, just so everyone's aware. But it sounds like we both are very happy with our wine choices today, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a little concerned about your Argentinian wines that you're bringing because, you know, I'm Chilean and we have a rivalry. You do know this, right?
I do. You know, I need to make more of an effort. I feel like Argentinian wines are more available here. Up here, you know, but you're right. I need to incorporate some Chilean wines.
No, I gotta say, I gotta give it to wines from Argentina. They're good. And Malbecs are delicious.
So good.
So no hate there.
Just love for wine.
Yeah. All they love. Just like this episode. Yeah. Just love.
Yeah. Speaking of, so we are going to go through six major ways that you can kind of keep track of your progress. So if you're working on making changes to the foods or the drinks that you're, you know, incorporating, maybe you're working on changes to your movement, right? Your physical activity routines. Maybe you're working on some other aspects, some stress reduction, sleep, whatever it is that you're working on. We want to give you some tangible things to pay attention to instead of just the scale. Because health is so much more than just one number. And it's really unfair to distill it down to that. So we're going to expand our worlds a little bit and go through our six. There are many more, of course, but we're going to focus in on six specifically today. So Kat, do you want to start us off?
Yes. So number one, and again, we don't have a specific order. We're just naming some things that we have been able to track with some of our clients or just in general. But number one is more energy. And adulting is hard. Being an adult is hard. And
we don't even have children.
You have more. I know, we don't have children. And we're like, oh, life is just hard. I don't know how mothers do it, honestly. It's so impressive. Anyhow, having more energy based on some adjustment or some changes in your diet or lifestyle and being able to achieve more energy, I mean, that is just premium outcome. And having more energy might look a little different for one person versus another, and feeling a little bit more energized, being able to do the tasks that you do normally with more enthusiasm or without feeling like your whole body is made of concrete, that is a massive accomplishment. Mm-hmm.
I am revealing personal things here. Mm-hmm. I am somebody who struggles with fatigue because I have this autoimmune situation called Hashimoto's, which, you know what? Fuck Hashimoto's.
Agreed.
Fuck it.
Hate it.
Awesome. It's just awful. It's awful. It's awful. But anyway, so if you're a fellow Hashis out there and you get what I'm talking about, and your body feels like it's made of concrete and you just walking across the room feels like it takes all the energy possible, you get that this is a massive accomplishment. And sometimes adjusting your diet or your lifestyle in a way that works for your body, one of the things that you might experience is more energy. And I am here for it. Like, if you tell me following a diet or a diet adjustment or a lifestyle adjustment will provide me with more energy, I am 1,000% in. It's a good way of knowing that maybe the adjustments you've made or the diet you're following or whatever it is, the approach of life that you're, the new approach of life that you're doing is giving you more energy. Babe, go for it.
Right, like such a quality of life boost, right? Oof. However that looks for you, even if it's just, you know, you're not, if you have the luxury of taking naps, maybe if you're retired or you just have like a different type of, you know, a non-traditional work schedule, even if it's just like not feeling the need to nap as much, like that's so huge. Like something that happens day to day, like to have that difference in your energy level is really big.
Massive.
Number two, again, in no order, but our second one we're going through is feeling stronger. So perhaps you feel physically stronger. And again, this could show up in different ways. It could feel different for different people. But if you're able to do things that maybe you didn't used to be able to do, whether that's walking, you know, a block farther, maybe it's getting easier to carry groceries like in from your car into your home. If we are fueling ourselves with nutrient-dense foods, that's going to have an impact on what you feel like you can do from day to day, whether that's activities of daily living. So things like walking or things like carrying groceries. Maybe it's like picking up your kids or your grandkids. Those are all really big shifts that again, bring back to that quality of life point. So when you're able to do things like that maybe you were not previously, those are really huge wins and definitely something to celebrate. Additionally, you know, if you're someone who regularly is working out or like trying different types of workouts, you might find that you're like much more capable and able to do, you know, more push-ups or run faster or whatever it is. Those are, you know, also huge wins, like to be able to kind of push your body to that level, but feel like you can do it, right? Not like you're killing yourself, like you just want to die, like it's such a hard workout. Like you're able to do it and you feel good and you feel confident. Like feeling stronger is really important, especially as we get older. You know, you think about like falls too, the risk of falls being increased as we get older. The more that we can kind of arm our body with proper nutrition and really give it the best chance as we get older, you know, we're all here for that.
Totally. Gosh, feeling stronger. I'm the variety of person that likes to feel like they can, that they can carry heavy things. I'm not very tall. Uh-huh. or big, you know. I'm a pretty petite person, and you know, if everyone's grabbing bags from the car to carry them inside the house, I will make a point to carry the heaviest one just because I want to be like, yes, I can't, you know, that's my personality. And I often get yelled at, you know, like, especially if my dad's around or there's a big guy who, like, you know, they can likely carry it with more ease and look less awkward with a massive bag that they're carrying. But I love working out or just like feeling like my body is stronger physically because I feel like I can accomplish things, and I feel the need to prove that when carrying heavy items.
Yeah, I always try to carry as many grocery bags as possible. Maybe not so much related to feeling stronger, but like avoiding the trip. Like, we live in a condo at the moment. Avoiding that trip, like back down the stairs, back all the way to the car, wherever it's parked. You know, it's just, it's more convenient if you can carry a lot of bags at one time.
Yeah, and then your fingers hurt real bad, but it was like totally worth it. Yeah, yeah. So number three, and this one's a big one, it's labs. So when your doctor orders labs and, you know, if you're doing a general checkup or you're just following up on a previous specific value, let's say glucose or cholesterol or thyroid or whatever it is, and your labs represent something positive, I think that is a huge sign of progress. That for some reason, weight tends to trump lab values, and it's obnoxious because clearly the bigger or more meaningful outcome for anybody providing healthcare should be that your labs reflect a good change or good outcomes or improvement, right? And as a society, we're so focused on the damn weight and the number on your scale. And I'm sorry, but that doesn't tell me very much. You know, like maybe you lost a ton of water weight. What does that have to do with health outcomes? If your glucose is improving, if your insulin resistance is getting better, if your cholesterol is down, if your HDL, your good cholesterol is up, if you are have been working for a while to try to get rid of your fatty liver disease, and now you no longer have fatty liver disease because of your labs represent an improvement, that shit is gold.
Right. Like, labs are a window inside your body. Like, what
exactly?
What could be more important?
Exactly. So can we stop obsessing with weight collectively?
And there are many, many cases where you may see really great improvement in labs and the weight, you know, might be about the same or maybe has fluctuated a little bit, but not a ton. And I totally understand where people might be frustrated with that, but we just want to encourage you, like, that's okay. Like, we validate that frustration. Like, there is a lot of focus on weight, messages coming from all sorts of places, but we don't want to let that overshadow those huge wins. And wins in our labs, positive changes in those biomarkers, truly are telling us what's happening on the inside of your body. Like, so much more informative than one number on a scale.
Exactly.
Just like, yes. Can't emphasize yes. enough.
Yes. I mean, how come we don't have a system or a subscription process where we clap when people's labs improve rather than weight?
Right. And, you know, as we're talking about this, I'm also realizing, you know, part of it is, you know, you can take your weight at home, right? Weight is much more accessible. It's easier to get. The issue of like healthcare access, like not everyone can get regular labs, of course. But if hopefully, you know, if you have access to a regular physician, like preventative care, like really, if you're interested, like try to advocate for yourself, even if you are young and quote unquote healthy, like get the labs, you know, maybe not every year, but like prompt your doctor, like, hey, I would love to see a lipid panel, or I would love to see my A1C, or just like a random blood glucose. Like, that is within your right as a patient no matter if you're viewed as healthy or not, or you're underweight, you're normal weight, quote unquote, you're overweight, whatever it is, you have that right to ask for those labs. And that is that's such a big step in advocating for your own health.
Totally. I think too, I understand, like, especially to your point of having a scale is not very expensive or difficult to obtain. And so getting your weight is kind of an easy way to track it. But our main point here is, weight isn't the only thing that can determine whether you're headed in the right or wrong direction, right? There is so much more nuance to it. Gaining weight or losing weight is not necessarily something inherently good or inherently bad. Mm-hmm. There are so many other factors that play into that weight fluctuation. Laboratory values, unless it's taken, you know, unless it's wrongly taken and this is a mistake from the laboratory perspective, they're more accurate representing what's going on inside your body and a better indicator of where you are physically. And some of these labs, there's not much you can control, right? Some of these conditions are either genetic or there's outside factors, but we're trying to get at the bigger picture of health, which involves many moving parts, not just weight.
Right. Huge one. We are very passionate about labs, if you couldn't tell.
Fun fact, if you've ever met a dietitian, I guarantee you, I bet you $1,000 that he or she, whenever they go to the doctor, they demand a full kidney profile, A1C, fasting glucose, cholesterol, all the labs you could possibly request. They will demand that. Just because we see a lot of people with various different conditions that they didn't know about. So I bet you $1,000 dietitians do that.
Some of them may have their own special system of recording those values and seeing how they change over time. I'm not talking about myself, just, you know, some people.
Obviously. Just randos.
Okay, moving on.
People you've never heard in a podcast.
It's just so interesting. It's so interesting to get that, like, inside look into your body. But I digress. Okay, number four, another way to think about progress that you're having is to look at your quality of sleep, your quality and your quantity of sleep. So often when people are taking care of their bodies, in terms of what they're eating, in terms of how much they're moving, maybe they're engaging in a lot of coping strategies that are helping them manage stress, that is going to lead to a higher quality sleep. And I don't know about you, Kat, but when I was little, I hated napping, like didn't want to nap, didn't want to go to bed, just like procrastinated bedtime. And now that I'm an adult, I am just like, what were you doing? Like, why? All I want is sleep. Like, as an adult, sleep is just so lovely. And anything we can do to improve that sleep, like eating higher quality foods, nutrient dense foods, making sure you're moving enough throughout the day, like getting in a workout if you can, getting in something that makes you feel good, a walk, yoga, whatever it is, that is going to help you feel, you're going to be able to wind down at the end of the night, kind of quiet the mind, right? A lot of it is like sometimes people will lay down and there's a lot going on up there. There's a lot you're thinking about and it can be difficult to really shut the body down. So the more we can take care of ourselves during the day, that's going to make it easier to fully rest at night. And that has all sorts of wonderful impacts on our health. There's a lot of interaction between our sleep cycle and hormones that are related to our appetite, our hunger, our satiety. And so sleep is really, it's such a core component to health that I really don't, maybe we should do a whole episode on sleep, honestly, because I feel like people think about it as much as they think about food or movement or exercise. But the reality is you can't, it's not like you can eat like more broccoli and sleep less, right? Like there's, it doesn't work like that. Like there's no substitute for quality rest.
Yeah, absolutely right. Can we do an honesty check here?
Sure.
Like honest answer. Mm-hmm. Do you have like a sleep hygiene or a sleeping ritual that you do most nights to help you kind of have a restful night?
Oh yeah. I have a lot of steps.
Okay. Can you walk me through those steps?
A lot of skincare steps. So I don't know if that counts, but yeah, I mean, and you know, there are times in life where I'm better about this than others, but it's always something I strive to do. There's a lot of research around shutting off screens, like not exposing yourself to the blue light from, you know, phones, tablets, TV. So I do try to shut down my screens at least. Like, you really should try to do it about an hour, but, you know, sometimes that's just not in the cards. So I try to have like a half hour without screens. And usually during that time, I'm doing a very long skincare routine. You know, stay fresh, stay young. And so that takes quite a while. And then I will lay down and I love reading before bed. Like just love getting lost in like a fiction. I always get those mixed up. I love like getting lost in a fiction book before bed. And that usually, it just helps me like not think about anything I'm worried about. Like when you're in a book, you know, when you're reading a good book, it's hard to think about other things that might be going on. And I feel like that really helps me drift off to sleep. There have been times I would do meditation before bed, like do a meditation on Insight Timer or like a different app. But I haven't done that as much as of late. What about you? Do you have a go-to routine?
You impress me as a human being. That's all I have to say. I am, you guys, she has no...
It's been a work in progress.
No wrinkles, you guys. No wrinkles. It's crazy.
Not true.
I'm going to be honest. I'm terrible about this. I'm awful. I just wrote a blog post on the importance of sleep and tryptophan and like all this crazy stuff about screens. I mean, I know. But man, I have so much in my brain all the time, and it's really hard for me to shut it off and just like, you know, engage. And I think I struggle with, man, I'm just confessing all of my sins over here in this podcast, but I have a hard time feeling like it's okay to take my time to take care for myself. So I literally scroll the internet until I can no longer keep my eyes open. And that's my sleep routine.
And that's my routine. But I think a lot of people can relate to that. And I have certainly been in that boat like many a time in my life. But I think it's, you know, as you shift like through life and go through different seasons, you know, you might find what works better for you. But a lot of the times it's like the consistency. Like even if you know, I'm very passionate about bedtime routines, if you can't tell. Like yeah. I really enjoy it. I love talking about it. But I think you know what you should do, yeah. right? Or what you want to do. Like most people do. But like the actual doing it is
so tough. I can't. I don't know. It's almost like I don't want to find out what I've been thinking about. I don't want to purge. I don't want to turn my brain off. I just feel like if it shuts itself off on its own, it's better. I don't know why. But I look over to David, my husband, who he has his
sleeping.
Noise-canceling little machine. He has like an air filter. He has one of these sleeping masks that he wears because the light bothers him. He sometimes wears like these like earplugs because of the noise. He'll do a meditation at night. Like he has a whole routine and I'm just over here reading the news at like midnight trying to fall asleep. And I know the news is the worst. one to read, but I'm over here. New York Times.
Yeah, especially these days.
Doom scrolling until my brain's like, what are you doing? And then I'm like, all right, fine. And then I fall asleep. It's a bad thing. Anyway, moving on.
It sounds like it's not working for you, but maybe we could do a whole nother episode.
Yeah, we should. And you should teach me your ways.
Bedtime stuff, sleep stuff.
P.S. I'm the one who does the meditations on her
webs. Yeah, right.
But I'm not hypocritical in the sense that I don't do meditation. I just don't do them at night.
Before bed.
Yeah, which is when you could potentially do it so that you calm yourself. Anyway, I'm just going to keep going because I'm telling too much about myself. Okay.
Think we're on number cinco.
We're number cinco. So this one's a big one. I think this relates a lot to the world of dieting. And if you haven't heard our previous episodes, we have a whole episode on why we are non-diet dietitians. But the feeling satisfied after eating a meal without the loaded feelings is massive. It's a big accomplishment. I think it's a sign of progress when you no longer feel guilty whenever you engage in eating anything. For some reason, there are so many polarizing feelings whenever we engage in a specific pattern of eating. And whether that's you feel like you're doing really well and it's almost like you feel morally superior to other people because you're eating a specific way, or you're having a fun week and or a difficult one and you're eating foods that are not considered super nutrient dense and you're feeling really guilty. There are so many range of emotions that can come from engaging in a pattern of eating, and being able to feel satisfied with your meal and not have to fight your feelings on that is a massive sign of progress. Massive.
Mm-hmm. Really big. I mean, that's so freeing for many people compared to maybe how they felt previously, you know, when following certain diets or meal patterns. That's just, it's such a different way to live, like such a more, it's more liberating.
It is. I mean, that's the whole point of finding food freedom, right? The reason why we have to be free from food is not because we don't need the food and we can just sustain ourselves as robots, but rather because the freedom comes from the emotional attachment we put on food that carries through our entire living experience that can make us feel miserable. And man, life is hard enough. Can we just enjoy the freaking pizza and leave it? Yes. I love that I always go to pizza as the food people feel guilty of. Just use your imagination. You know, it could be whatever. You could feel guilty for whatever, or positive or negative emotions. But the point is, finding food freedom is something wonderful that happens at some point in a journey where you no longer feel emotionally loaded after eating. And you need to eat. So that could be a positive sign of progress.
Yeah. Big non-scale victory.
Exactly.
Big quality of life victory.
I'll drink to that.
Cheers.
Cheers. I've been sipping on this wine. You guys, it gets better with each sip. It's just so delicious.
Perhaps they will be a sponsor for us when we make it big.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah. Okay, we have arrived at number six. So one that we wanted to leave you with is another, you know, non-scale victory to keep in mind is often when people find what works for them in terms of eating, in terms of movement, in terms of, you know, things that just make them feel good, they start to feel more confident. So they just, you know, trust themselves more, like trust their intuition, trust their body. Just they have more self-efficacy and more self-confidence in making choices to continue taking care of themselves. So it's like often, you know, people might be confused and feel lost and be struggling for so long, like maybe lost in the diet world. Maybe you're just like navigating a health condition for a while. Whatever it is that led you to that point, that can be so like isolating and so frustrating. And you could like just feel like you can't trust your body. You're just like doubting everything. But that moment, whatever you go through, whether you're working, you know, with a dietitian, you're working with a health professional, maybe you found a really good like support group, a community group, whatever you're doing, you find what works for you and you start to trust yourself. That is beautiful. I love that for people. It's just, it's such a wonderful thing to watch.
It truly is. And, you know, to quote Ted Lasso, although I may not do it justice, but a good mentor not only wants you to move on, but expects you to. And there's a nutrition kind of guide, if you want to call it mentor, that's fine. But as somebody who wants to work with somebody in a way that I become obsolete, I want people to feel like they understand enough about their body and about mm-hmm. nutrition that they can make their own choices and confidently walk through life feeling really good about that. Right. And that is a massive change from what is available right now in the nutrition world, where it's like, follow my rules and forget what you feel and fuck your feelings. These are the rules, mm-hmm. you know, it's, mm-hmm. and there's not a point in that journey where the dictator of rules becomes obsolete, but there should be, right? Because if these are things that are teachable in the time of life, wouldn't there be a point where you can implement those tools and move on with your life? Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Right. Yeah. And people might, you know, you might desire a continued level of support, like a continued community at some level. But there are certainly ways to, you know, to be in that boat, but still just like feel like you got it, you know, feel like you get it and you understand how to take care of your body. And maybe you're experiencing all of the other things that we just talked through today. And that is always our hope. That is our hope for people that come into our circle.
Of course. Of course. I think when you have the appropriate tools to be able to do it yourself, it's wonderful. Wanting a community and support is also 100% valid. And nutrition mm-hmm. is science, and it's a fairly new science. So wanting to be plugged in and seek help or guidance anytime in your life is more than understandable. It's almost like expected, mm-hmm. right? To want to find that guidance. But when you find a little bit of a groove, a little bit of like something comes to you easier, that's our goal. And that's wonderful to see someone go from needing you to hold their hand for everything to like, I got it. I know what I'm doing.
Right.
It's awesome.
Yeah. It's more like celebrating the wins together.
Yeah, totally. Well, that comes to the end of our episode. I hope it was light and fun, just as promised. I will work on my sleep routine. If you guys
will revisit that. We'll keep you posted.
I'll get an intervention from Kelly after this episode is done. But we love having you here. We absolutely feel honored that you spend this time listening to us. So if you like what we're putting down, rate, subscribe, and comment on our podcast. Share it with your friends. If you know somebody that might find our content useful, please send them our way. We love to love on people. So yeah, that is all for today. We will see you guys next week for another amazing episode. Bye.
Adios.